Alex, one of the things that you're looking at is cardiovascular health, and in particular, how it relates to the boomer generation, of which I'm one. I'm a boomer. I'm heading into that age now where I'm going to start taking, having to use the healthcare system a lot more than perhaps in the past. What are some of the, I guess, important issues at this point?
Well, I think for the boomer generation, the important issues that they're facing are health-related and age-related. They're often at a stage in life where they're still engaged in jobs. They have multiple diverse social, recreational roles. There's things that they like to enjoy to do, enjoy to travel. And the world is full of possibilities for them. But inevitably, they're living in aging bodies. And one thing we do know is the body ages. We're more likely to develop health problems, particularly when we reach our 70s and particularly our 80s. And lots of those health problems in our 70s and 80s have their roots in health behaviors that can be long established when we're in our 40s, our 50s, and our 60s. And they're the ages where most boomers are now. But of course, some of those to the upper end are moving into this more at-risk population. So they are beginning to think about health issues and also manage health issues. But alongside this managing of their aspirations and their life patterns and the responsibilities and roles that are associated with them. And this means that healthcare providers have to think of issues like access, issues like how they're going to reach out to this boomer population, and also some of the issues of how they integrate recommendations for care, for management, for prevention and rehabilitation with the values, the aspirations, and the lives of the baby boomer generations.
If a person's already in their mid-40s or mid-50s, isn't it too late?
Oh, it's never too late. It's never too early either. But particularly, it's never too late. And we know from research that even people who are aged 90 years of age and above, almost within days of starting to exercise more intensively, there are health benefits. And there are benefits in terms of mental health as regards weight loss and regular physical activity, social engagement, having a strong social network as well. So from a research point of view, it is never too early and nor is it ever too late.
Now, one of the terms that you've used is something called anticipatory medicine. What is that?
Well, anticipatory healthcare is an approach to healthcare that focuses very much on prevention. We know that we're facing, if you like, an epidemic of chronic disease in high-income, middle-income, and low-income countries. Now, in high-income countries like Canada, that epidemic really relates particularly to the population aged 75, 85 years of age and above. But many of the chronic diseases that we tend to see in those age groups have their roots in lifestyles that are established very early on in life, almost in the teenage years. But it's only as the body ages that we really see the health harming effects of these behaviors as an individual gets older. Anticipatory care focuses prevention less on people in their 65, 75 years of age when they have, for example, a heart attack or they develop diabetes, towards interventions that provide support for health behavior change when people are in their 40s or 50s before they develop these health problems, but while they're engaged in these potentially health-harming behaviors. So it's really moving support earlier on in the age trajectory.
When someone is 45 or, you know, 50, you still think that you're going to live forever, even though we're told all the time, well, you've got to do more exercise, you've got to change the way you eat. Most people really don't, or they don't do enough. So how do you get beyond that?
I think the reaction we have often to disease and chronic disease is that it's never going to happen to us. And I've talked to people who have just had heart attacks and they're at a point in their life where they don't know they're going to live yet. And a common reaction is, I never thought it would happen to me. And this can be despite the fact they may be engaging in smoking for 40 or 50 years and have well-known risk factors. People don't tend to think it's going to happen to them. particularly then when we think about that mindset, but in someone in their 40s or 50s who often have a busy work responsibilities, they have busy lives, and they may be caring for aged parents as well. To engage in health behaviors can be challenging at that point in life, just from a time point of view. But there's lots of positive things that we can do. And we know that Canadians, on the whole, live relatively healthy lives in terms of physical activity. When you look at the physical activity levels across populations, in Canada, you tend to have a more active population than other comparable countries. Nevertheless, including sufficient physical activity is challenging, and engaging in healthy diet when there's so many interesting and tasty food options available can be challenging. But there's lots of little changes you can do at those 45, 55, and 65 years of age that can make a real difference in terms of your health. Finding 30 to 60 minutes each day to be physically active. Trying to choose healthy choices as opposed to unhealthy choices in relation to certain food groups. And it's less a case of having to abstain from foods now. Very much the approach is thinking of your portion size, thinking of the food types as well, in order that you can enjoy foods, but enjoy them in a way that's sustainable and is going to promote your health over the long term.
One of the areas of your research that you're focusing on is the factors that prevent people from making change. And I think with relation to the boomer generation, are there some things unique to our generation, because I'm a boomer too, that prevents us from perhaps making those changes?
I think for the boomer generation, particular barriers to health behavioral change are inevitably competing commitments. We often hear, "I'm too busy to exercise." It's a common reaction. We often hear that food is too expensive. If it's healthy food, fruit and vegetables in someone like Edmonton can be a little bit more expensive. And that can be challenging as well when you have lots of other financial commitments in your life. Accessing health services. Men are notoriously known for putting off seeking help, sometimes for the beginning sign of a health problem. They'll often dismiss it or attribute it to something less threatening rather than think about what that lump could be or what that abrasion on their skin might indicate. In terms of accessing health services and getting the time and commitment to do that, that can be an issue for the boomer generation as well. However, from a healthcare perspective, we would very much encourage people to seek healthcare in a timely fashion from their family doctor, who is often available, you know, in summer evenings, at least outside office hours. We would encourage them to engage in regular consumption of fruit and vegetables and use farmers markets and try to utilize local producers in order to eat 5 to 10 portions a day, if that's possible, and engage in regular physical activity. And if you can integrate physical activity into your daily life in the little things, so if you work in an office building, climbing the stairs every day as opposed to leaving the elevators can be one thing where you can incorporate climbing a number of mountains each year just into your daily physical activity plans. And when we do things like this, even if they're in small amounts, they can really add up. And there is some research around television remote controls. And if you switch your television manually by walking to it and pressing the old buttons as opposed to using your remote control, you can consume thousands of calories a year by doing that.
One of the things I read, there's a difference between our generation, the boomer generation, and our parents' generation, and that is this respect for authority. How does that enter into this?
The boomer generation are interesting because they have grown up in a culture that's more saturated with the mass media. They've also grown up in a culture where consumerism has been more prominent, where the notion of working with experts and professionals and service providers is very normal for them. But they do expect their values, their preferences, their time patterns to be integrated with those encounters and those engagements with those others. Now, when baby boomers engage in healthcare, this means their reactions can be quite different than their mothers and fathers and previous generations have been. They may be less likely to respect the inherent authority of someone like a physician or another health professional. They may be less keen to integrate a very heavy, burdensome, medicalized regimen into their daily life. So, for example, if someone is prescribed 10 or 15 medicines each day, a number of times a day, rather than feeding back to their health professional that that's too much, often we find that they will get their prescription but simply won't take their medication as they've been advised. From a healthcare professional's perspective, then, the boomer generation create new and interesting challenges for us as far as how can we integrate the recommendations we have from research about what patients should do versus the reality of patients' lives and their values and their preferences. And really finding that integration between the ideal recommended by research and the reality of the boomer generation's lives, I think, is key to efficient modern healthcare for the boomer generation.
When we look at this aging generation, is the healthcare system ready to take us on?
The healthcare system in high-income, middle-income, and low-income countries, due to the longer lives that we're having, it creates enormous challenges for our old established care models. If you look at low- and middle-income countries, the fastest population in these countries are the over 65 years of age populations. And in Canada and similar high-income countries, the over 85 years of age populations. And quite simply, I don't believe we have the number of physicians, the number of nurses, or the number of hospitals to deal with the chronic diseases that these populations will develop in their 80s and 70s in particular with our current approaches to care. These approaches to care tend to be more centralized. They focus a lot on health professionals doing things for patients in acute care settings. And in the long term, we need to move to an approach that focuses a lot more on patients and families caring for themselves and being empowered by health professionals with knowledge and skills and support in order to care for themselves better at home, coming into hospital or utilizing services when they have to, but engaging in far more care in the home setting.
Your current research, what are some of the things that you're working on with this regard?
In relation to my current research around self-care, we've been looking at some of the self-care issues that relate to heart failure, which is a very common form of heart disease that occurs in people who have had heart attacks or have had high blood pressure over the long term. And we estimate, for example, as many as 6 to 10% of people over 65 years of age in Canada have heart failure. So it's very common. People with heart failure tend to use hospitals a lot. So in any one year, somebody who's been diagnosed with heart failure, there's a 30% chance they'll be hospitalized within that one year. And when they get to hospital, we know they tend to stay a long time, a mean of 13 days on average. So heart failure care in hospital is expensive, and we're also dealing with a large population size. And this population size exists not just in urban parts of Canada, but rural parts too. One in five hospitalizations for heart failure are in rural hospitals. When we've done research to look at how effectively people with heart failure manage their conditions at home, we find some really concerning trends. We find that about a third of patients don't know they have heart failure. We find that the proportion of patients who don't understand what they should do in terms of management to be very concerning indeed. So, for example, people with heart failure should be watching their weight every day in order to make sure their heart failure is not worsening. But perhaps less than 10% of patients actively do that. So there's real issues here about what patients know and also the skills they have to manage their conditions at home. Because the converse is, there's never been a stage in history where there's not been more we can do. There's so much we can do for heart failure now. There's effective medications. We know now that regular physical activity can help. We know that good care of depression and other psychosocial implications can really help as well. So there's lots that can be done for heart failure patients now. But the missing key is how to empower and support patients to care for themselves better in their own homes to avoid those high and costly hospitalizations that I mentioned. So we've been carrying out research to understand how people see, understand heart failure as they manage it at home, and also the skills they have in relation to management. So for example, we've identified in rural parts of Alberta that people often draw on the skills that they developed managing their farms and managing their rural homes, and they bring those skills to their daily disease management. And that's a really effective way in terms of improving the quality of the disease management in terms of effectiveness. So, for example, being hardy in the face of adversity, engaging in daily repetitive activities, which you naturally do often when you're caring for rural land. These are fairly central to the skills that rural people with heart failure bring to their daily management. And they see that as an extension of the skills they've engaged in over their life. They don't see it as something different. And that's an important thing that health professionals can develop. The ethos and the values behind that are things we can harness in order to stop that patient with heart failure coming into hospital just quite so regularly.
Is there a bottom line message for people?
I think the bottom line message for people who are baby boomers is it's never too late. It's never too late to exercise a little bit more. It's never too late to exercise a little bit more intensely. To eat better, to make healthy choices as much as you can every day. And there's so much more options now in terms of food. We have amazing availability of different fruit and vegetables. And I challenge anyone to find a fruit and vegetable that they don't like because there is such diversity out there now. So I think the positive message for everyone is things that we can all do to improve our health. And the time isn't tomorrow, the time is now.
Thank you very much, Alex.
My pleasure. Thank you.